Hello and welcome. This is a BICOM podcast. I'm Richard Pater, the director of BICOM based here in Jerusalem. I'm delighted to be joined today with Professor Eyal Zissa from Tel Aviv University. He's actually the vice rector of the university, having previously served as the head of the Department for Middle East and African History. Professor Zissa is one of Israel's leading regional experts, specifically having written many articles and books on the politics of Lebanon and Syria and the Arab-Israeli conflict. He's also a regular columnist on the Israel Hayom newspaper. Professor Eyal, thank you very much indeed for joining me today.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
So, I mean, it would be great to kind of to indulge in your expertise and kind of to go, as we say, around the grounds of the neighborhood and get your assessment on where things stand on a range of theaters. If we could start from here and look north in Lebanon, we've seen kind of the protests that are going on there. And I just wanted to get your assessment, kind of how bad you think it really is inside Lebanon right now. And I suppose from Israel's perspective, how this the latest events have affected Hezbollah's powerful position and affect their future calculations as well.
Well, Lebanon is facing a severe crisis. It's not only the coronavirus crisis. Before that, there was a severe economic crisis. Actually, the Lebanese economy collapsed. And I guess that it will not get any better after it will recover, when it recovers from the coronavirus crisis. Now, what is interesting is that for many years, Hezbollah presented himself as some sort of an outsider, an organization, a political power that represent those weak segments within the Lebanese society that is entirely devoted to try and promote their interests. But now, because he is in power for so many years, many Lebanese inside the Shiite community, but especially outside the Shiite community, come to see him as, first of all, having responsibility for the crisis, because in Lebanon nowadays, he is the power. He's not an outsider. And many argue that he is one of the causes for the economic decline and recession and the crisis. I mean, even when we speak about the coronavirus, I mean, there are those Lebanese who say, you know, it's because of the links between Hezbollah and Iran that forced the Lebanese government to keep the sky open for flights from Iran. And that's what caused the spread of the virus inside the Lebanon. So he's under severe pressure. I guess that the conclusion is, even for Hezbollah, that it's not the right time to provoke Israel, to play, you know, games with Israel. War with Israel is the last thing Hezbollah wants and needs right now, and is entirely focused on the domestic challenges he's facing inside Lebanon.
Well, I suppose that's some good news for Israel at least. If we go across the neighborhood into Syria, what did you make of the a week or so ago the reports in the Israeli media of a senior Israeli defense official suggesting that Iran was beginning to limit their presence inside Syria? Do you give that credibility? How do you assess kind of the Shiite proxies and in fact even Hezbollah's Golan operations?
Well, I think such a statement was made by the defense minister, the previous defense minister Bennett, who, you know, the same day overcame the coronavirus. He argued that, you know, we achieve a breakthrough, and then he got rid of the Iranians. Well, I don't buy it. Yes, Israel did well. And when we speak about the campaign against the Iranian efforts to establish Iranian presence in Syria. Well, you know, we did well when it comes to the phase of containment. I mean, Iran didn't build new installations and new outposts, and didn't deploy new weaponry, advanced weaponry systems in Syria. In this regard, yes, Israel did well in putting a red line and preventing any further Iranian establish or even presence in Syria. But Iran is there. There are thousands of Iranian soldiers or Shiite militias sent by the Iranians. The Iranians shed their blood. Thousands of Iranian soldiers were killed in the battlefield in Syria. They pour billions of dollars to secure Assad's survival. So they will not give up. And just because there are some limited Israeli airstrikes, they will go back to Iran. Iran is under pressure, economic pressure, the coronavirus, I mean, a change in the American policy in regard to Iran. The Americans are now more assertive, the assassination of Qasem Soleimani, so they are under pressure. But as I said before, I mean, when we look at what Israel did, we speak mainly about containment. It will take time till we are able, if at all, to push Iran out of Syria.
I mean, if I change tack again, one of the biggest issues coming down the track is annexation. And we saw some strong words from the Palestinian Authority chairman earlier this week. How do you see annexation playing out? What did you make of Mahmoud Abbas's comments?
Well, I think, first of all, the whole issue of annexation had to do with, you know, Israeli politics. And I guess that now, when there is a government and Netanyahu got what he wanted, I don't see any need to, you know, go on with that project. But at the same time, you know, if the Americans give you a green light, I think that the main challenge Israel is facing had nothing to do with Abu Abbas and the European Union. Yes, there will be criticism, but the main challenge or the main question Israel should ask itself is not what might be the reaction of Abu Abbas, or what might be the reaction of even King Abdullah of Jordan, but what Israel is going to do with 2-3 million Palestinians in the West Bank who eventually would try to become Israeli citizens. Because, you know, the one-state solution means, you know, that those people will try, they already try to become Israelis. Is that what Israeli needs, wants? That's the main question, and not necessarily, well, Abu Abbas is making, you know, those statements year by year, and every time this is the same music, nothing basically new, and he has no cards in his hands. So I wouldn't make too much out of his comments.
What do you think about the comments from the Europeans?
Well, you know, when we speak about the Europeans, we don't speak about the European Union. We speak about several European states who are known for their friendship for Israel, Ireland, you know, Luxembourg. Mm. Once again, I guess also that the statements made by the European are aimed not only at Israel, but also at the American administration. That's maybe a serious reason for concern for the European. And it's, you know, to hit Trump through Israel. But of course, you can't expect that everybody will welcome and applaud to such an Israeli move. Israel will have to take it into consideration, whether it's worthwhile.
And in your assessment, in terms of the depth of the possible move, that we understand there's the mapping team between the US and Israel kind of working on these, on the parameters and the extent of it. If we talk about the Jordan Valley, which kind of is part of the consensus, I would say, within kind of broadly mainstream Israeli society, do you think that's realistic? And how concerned are you about the Jordanians and their possible responses?
First of all, I'm concerned about Jordanian because the security wall is not the Israeli fence or the river. The real security zone is Jordan, that is actually protecting Israel. That's what it did for, since it was established, you know, a friendly, even, you know, if it was for many years covered relations and still friendly entity in full security cooperation with Israel, and they were those who protected Israel from the Syrians, the Iraqis under Saddam Hussein, ISIS, etc., etc. So the survival and the strength of this kingdom is in Israeli interest. Now to annex, even if in full agreement with the Americans, this territory or that territory is not only unrealistic, it's not a wise move. I mean, the question you should ask yourself is not whether to annex this town or this settlement, but are you committed to the two-state solution? I mean, if Israel and the Americans come and say, well, I'm ready to accept or to establish a Palestinian state, but it will be only on 70%. Okay, that's one thing. But, you know, to ignore, as many in the right wing do, you know, the question, and to say, well, what we do is, trying to use the opportunity and annex piece by piece, this is not very useful.
If we look down south now onto the Gaza border, there was a lot of concern over the last month or two when there was a possibility that the coronavirus would spread into the Gaza Strip, which could have been devastating for their capacity to deal with it. And then we had the resulting conversation about a potential prisoner exchange of the bodies of the two soldiers and the two Israeli civilians that Hamas holds. Do you think that's serious? Do you think that's off the agenda? I mean, did we just dodge a bullet with regard to corona in the Gaza Strip?
Well, the corona, it was a real crisis in Israel. I think now it's over, but at the time there was a real crisis. Everybody was focused on this issue. But at the same time, you know, it gave you many opportunities in many ways. You know, even in Tel Aviv University, as you mentioned, I'm the vice rector. I mean, it brought us, forced us to move to the 21st century. I mean, when it comes to, you know, teaching online. Yeah, I mean, something that was not at all on our agenda. And in one day we had to move, you know, to the next millennium. And as far as the Palestinians were concerned, you know, under the very severe and difficult circumstances we witnessed during the crisis, there was a possibility to reach an agreement. Now it's more complicated, you know, because there will be the public opinion, both the Israeli and the Palestinian, is not obsessed anymore with the coronavirus, and it can criticize and make it very difficult for the leaders to reach an agreement. The terms are now different, and still this is basically the interest of Israel and Hamas to reach some sort of settlement in this regard and solve this complicated and sensitive issue. It's good for the Israelis, it's good for Hamas, so maybe it will after all happen.
You think it's it's really possible? I mean, or it's not just it serves the interest of the sides to kind of to talk about it, but at the end of the day, the price is just too high.
No, it's not very high, and I think that eventually you can reach some sort of an agreement, because part of it had to do with money and humanitarian support for the population, and this is something that Israel is not basically against. So I think it can be worked out. We'll have to be patient. And,
okay.
Yeah.
It's nice to hear. Some optimism. Mm-hmm. Thank you for that. Just one or two more questions, if I may. We saw the Secretary of State Pompeo visit last week. Lots of theories are abounding within the Israeli media of what was really the agenda of the meeting. Was it to discuss Iran, potentially the cyber attacks that we now know kind of followed the exchange, the issue over the Chinese involvement in Israeli infrastructure, or was it just to kind of to get a feel for both Ashkenazi and Gantz, kind of the men of who else he was dealing with? It's no longer a kind of a binary just against Netanyahu, but with the new government to assess the characteristics and personalities of the other people at the helm. What did he do that he couldn't have done over the phone?
Well, you know, maybe he needed, you know, nowadays foreign ministers do not travel very often, not at all, yeah. So maybe he wanted, you know, a break from Washington. I don't know. But I guess it was, and also, let's face it, you know, the United States is approaching the election campaign and the election in November. Maybe they will be postponed, maybe not, but you know, when relations with Israelis are important in for Trump constituency, so maybe it had to do also with internal American politics. That's I don't know, but I guess it was the combination of all of those issues.
How concerned are you about the Chinese case in particular, about their investment in the water desalination and other kind of significant infrastructure projects here?
I'm concerned because the United States is concerned, and well, you know, this is for Israel a conflict of interest. I mean, on the one end, the United States is the closest ally of Israel. At the same time, you know, relations with China are excellent. But at the same time, you know, also the United States have, I wouldn't say excellent, but I don't know, but economic, good, important, solid economic relations with China. So it's not about boycott China. I guess that eventually a compromise or an agreement will be reached between the Americans and the Israelis. It's too important, too much is in risk when we come to speak about the Israeli-Chinese economic relations.
One last question, which you just touched on before. I mean, what do you make of a potential Biden presidency vis-a-vis what that would mean for Israel?
There is one thing for Israel is one thing, for Netanyahu is another thing. Yeah, for Netanyahu it may be tough, but we saw it also with Obama. Biden, you know, is basically pro-Israel. I mean, maybe he's not fond of the Netanyahu policy, so it will be much tougher. But I don't see any dramatic change. Israel should be worried about, you know, the young American, even young Jewish Americans who have maybe different views about the conflict, about Israel, but when it comes to Biden, you know, I'm not worried at all. But the government will have to work harder, and for Netanyahu it will be much tougher, but maybe he needs it, you know. He needs somebody to come and say, well, that's a red line, don't cross it, you know, because with Trump, that gave him, you know, this was a problem, yeah.
Very diplomatic. Okay. Well, listen, Professor Alzista, thank you very much indeed.
That was
really, really useful, and we appreciate your insights. Thank you.
Thank you.